to sing this song for the healing of the world.
Welcome to Spirit in Action. My name is Mark Helpsmeet, and each week we bring you visits and conversations with people doing healing work for this world, hearing what they're doing and what inspires them and supports them in doing it. Welcome to Spirit in Action. We have Jan Spencer sitting in today as guest host for Spirit in Action, talking about what he calls his primer for paradigm shift, the needed way of seeing and thinking about the world in order to become sustainable and to leave our world-wrecking ways behind us. This is the fourth time we're having Jan with us, helping us work on creating a preferred future. You can track down much of his insights via his YouTube videos and on his website, and those in Eugene, Oregon may be able to hear his broadcasts via KEPW. Jan has done the on-the-ground work of permaculture, lifestyle, environmental modification to live toward the preferred future we need, and many of his resources address those particulars. But the primer for paradigm shift is the big overview. He'll tell you all about it as I hand the microphone to Jan Spencer, leading us for Spirit in Action today from Eugene, Oregon.
Thanks, Mark. I'm glad to be here with Spirit in Action. It's springtime here in Eugene, and I'm spending a lot of time in my garden. Recall my previous production for Spirit in Action Radio 3 months ago was about paradigm shift. I've been working on a project I call a primer for paradigm shift. The primer is the accumulated educational output I've developed over many years of activism. The purpose of the primer is to encourage paradigm shift, a deep transformation in our culture, our economic system, and our own lives. Paradigm shift is a movement towards a shared ideal that would be a society that lives within the boundaries of the natural world, where one of the primary goals of society is to bring out the best and positive human potential, and that society would be served by an honest and accountable economic system. For me, paradigm shift should be nothing remarkable, simply guided by healthy self-interest and common sense. That healthy self-interest and common sense would include a deep care for other people and the natural environment. Paradigm shift is not a future utopia. Rather, we can engage with paradigm shift and enjoy many of the benefits in our own lives as soon as we care to. There are four core parts to the primer. The first part is a critique of capitalism and the consumer culture. The second part is about aspects of paradigm shift, such as the need to reduce our ecological footprints, how we prioritize our time and money, the wisdom of the world's great spiritual traditions and permaculture. The third part of the primer describes real-life examples of people engaged in paradigm shift. We looked at suburban permaculture. We had a look at several eco-villages, empowering young people, investing local. The fourth basic part of the primer is taking paradigm shift to a wider audience. One of the most important points to make about taking paradigm shift to a wider audience is all progressive public interest organizations are essentially on the same team because they all exist to address some form of social, political, economic, or environmental damage caused by capitalism and overconsumption. So because they are all on the same team, they have basic common interests, and ideally should be working much more closely together. I like to think we have an immense horizontal public interest movement in waiting. a thoughtful and compassionate pushback on capitalism benefits all of these organizations all at the same time. Part 4 of the primer is where I would like to focus my time for this edition of Spirit in Action, taking the ideas and actions of Paradigm Shift out to the wider world. But first, I'd like to share a few brief highlights from each part of the primer. And these highlights will create context for the rest of the program. Heads up, these highlights are really good sound bites. You might like to use some of them yourself. Okay, here we go. Our society will not reach sustainability, peace, and justice as long as capitalism and its political and business servants control the macroeconomy and push the consumer culture. Many of the most challenging and expensive problems facing individuals and our society today are totally avoidable, but they are very profitable. That's why we have them. Millions of jobs exist to repair the damage caused by the products and services of millions of other jobs. Our affluence would not be possible without the dishonest practice of externalizing the cost. The prices we pay don't address the damage caused by what we buy and what we consume. And finally, capitalism isn't broken. This economic malpractice is just what it does. Next, here are some aspects of Paradigm Shift. Paradigm Shift is not only about the environment. It's just as much about personal and social uplift and bringing out the best in positive human potential. We can make Paradigm Shift changes in our own lives, with our families, friends, and neighbors, with all kinds of allies and assets to be found in almost any community. Reducing our ecological footprints and building uplifted civic culture are two of the most important aspects of Paradigm Shift. Paradigm Shift does not require a big tech breakthrough. Rather, the most important breakthrough for Paradigm Shift is in our own consciousness. There's no shortage of money. We can pay for Paradigm Shift from home scale to the nation simply by how we prioritize our own time and money. That means investing in Paradigm Shift instead of vanity, excess, and self-indulgence. A final aspect. Capitalism and the consumer culture have provided us with an immense variety of tools, assets, and opportunities to advance the cause of Paradigm Shift. Next, real-life examples of Paradigm Shift. There are untold thousands of people and organizations already working to bring about Paradigm Shift all over the world, whether they identify with the term Paradigm Shift or not. Paradigm Shift starts at home in our own lives. Next, taking the ideas of Paradigm Shift to the wider world. We empower our advocacy for Paradigm Shift as groups and individuals when we visibly live the change. Our lifestyles, our homes, transportation, food choices, how we prioritize our time and money. Paradigm Shift can be boosted enormously when many thousands of people and progressive organizations already working to create a better world openly agree we are a movement, we have common cause, and our ideal is to create healthy alternatives to capitalism and the consumer culture. And finally, the goal of Paradigm Shift is not some distant utopia. It's common sense in the here and now, in our own lives, neighborhoods, and communities. You can find my Paradigm Shift content at Resilience Magazine, YouTube, Permaculture Design Magazine, and my website. Search Jan Spencer, Paradigm Shift. Very good. Moving along, let's have a look at taking paradigm shift ideas out to the wider world. There are lots of ways to take paradigm shift ideas out to the wider world. We'll focus on several. First, it's really important to emphasize how most progressive public interest organizations, those with an interest in the environment, social justice, affordable housing, electoral reform, public health, regenerative agriculture, creating walkable communities, and many others, they're all on the same team. Virtually all these organizations exist to repair some type of damage caused by capitalism and overconsumption of energy and resources. Paradigm shift is just as much about positive human potential and social uplift as the environment and sustainability. The social, the personal, the ecological are all closely related. Healthy, self-aware, and conscious people have the capacity to say, "I have enough stuff." Paradigm shift starts at home in our own lives. Our advocacy for paradigm shift is much more persuasive when we visibly practice paradigm shift in our own lives. From this perspective, a fundamental part of paradigm shift is reducing our ecological footprints. Our footprints, of course, are directly related to our lifestyle. The fancier the lifestyle, the bigger the footprint. Where can we advocate paradigm shift? The conditions that call for paradigm shift would fit into many discussions in classrooms, on meeting agendas with groups we might be involved with, a social concerns committee, a letter to the editor, and it's good to be knowledgeable about the issues as well. Many mainstream but progressive public interest organizations advocate for paradigm shift whether they realize it or not. I'm thinking about the Sierra Club with 3.5 million members. I'm thinking about the American Association of Retired Persons with 35 million members. These organizations can be an enormous help putting paradigm shift ideas out to a wider audience, even if they don't particularly use the term paradigm shift. The Sierra Club advocates energy and resource conservation. It advocates for the well-being of the natural environment. The Sierra Club has a very nicely produced magazine. Imagine if they had articles and features in that magazine explaining what an ecological lifestyle might look like. Such an article might focus on the act of transforming a suburban property. Say, this article is a profile of someone who bought a suburban property with the intention of transforming that property to reduce eco-footprints, to produce more basic needs on site. That article could describe trading grass for garden, edible landscaping, passive solar redesign, turning a garage into a living space, rainwater collection, food production, having more people living in that house, increasing residential density on existing properties helps reduce the pressure for building more suburban sprawl. The Sierra Club article could explain how taking these kinds of actions would help the Sierra Club accomplish its purpose. That article could also encourage the reader to check and see if their city has a neighborhood program and find out if the reader has a neighborhood association they could become involved with, because neighborhood associations are a perfect place to connect with others who care about the well-being of the neighborhood. Producing more basic needs closer to home makes the neighborhood more prepared, more secure, reduces pressure on the environment, and can also create civic culture. The American Association of Retired Persons, as mentioned, has 35 million members. That's an enormous asset that could be used more effectively to promote the ideals of paradigm shift. Just about every copy of the AARP's publication recommends healthy lifestyle. For example, what types of food choices make a healthy diet? Those same articles encourage physical exercise. The AARP advocates the proverbial 15-minute neighborhood, a walkable neighborhood, where many of our basic needs are close enough we don't need to drive a car. Imagine those articles explaining the challenges of having a healthy diet and why the giant food companies would prefer selling you junk food. Because there's more money to be made in junk food than selling healthy food. Imagine the AARP explaining to its members how business interests came to influence government policy for the last 100 years in favor of automobiles and suburbia. Imagine the Sierra Club and the AARP, along with hundreds and thousands of other public interest organizations, explaining to their members what is an external cost. Of course, an external cost is a consequence of using a product that affects others besides the person who bought the product and is using the product. Automobiles, for example, have many external costs. They make noise. They pollute the air. They have accidents that kill thousands of people every year and do hundreds of billions of dollars in property damage. External costs can be social as well. Society loses out on billions of hours of time lost in non-productive passive entertainment that could have been used instead to build healthy civic culture, personal enrichment, or volunteer for a worthwhile cause. Thousands of organizations could explain to their members the reality of external costs and why that means our economic system is not honest, because the prices we pay don't tell us an accurate story about the product, so we could make an informed decision about how best to spend our money. These organizations could go even further by explaining our familiar affluence is made possible because of the dishonesty of external costs. Our affluence is made possible by forcing the environment to pay the cost, by forcing public health to pay the cost, and by losing billions of hours of positive human potential to pop culture distractions. How might this tough luck content look in the near future? Let's do a little time travel. Imagine we are 5 years in the future when a growing number of public interest organizations are taking a more activist position with their outreach to the wider world. They're beginning to tell stories in their magazines, newsletters, and websites about people and projects advancing the cause of paradigm shift in real life. The Alliance for Nature has 3 million members and has been known for its decades-long, dependable, middle-of-the-road advocacy for the environment. But times are changing. Economic, social, political, and environmental problems known for decades continue to worsen. Confidence in the greenwash of business and political leaders for addressing these issues is in decline. People are looking for alternatives to the consumer culture in growing numbers. There's been a contentious change in leadership at the Alliance for Nature and other mainstream public interest groups. The old guard leadership are being replaced with a more activist direction. The new issue of the Alliance for Nature's magazine, with a circulation of over 3 million, reflects this widespread change in consciousness. Here's one of the stories with a short intro from the magazine's new editorial staff. Greetings, members of the Alliance for Nature. We are excited to begin a new era at AFN. We thank the previous leadership for their dedicated work over the years and their cooperation in making way for this new direction. The articles in this new issue of AFN magazine reflects an emerging, more activist organization that intends to provide both inspiration and practical information for helping our members and society move towards sustainability and social cohesion. Please enjoy the story. We thank John and Jane Doe for their enthusiastic participation in this article. Just 3 years ago, Jane and John Doe and their 7-year-old daughter Janet lived in a modest but comfortable suburban home. John and Jane had mid-level professional jobs. They had been members of AFN for 8 years. They're also increasingly concerned with the troublesome social and environmental trends they've known all their lives as they steadily grew worse. Inflation, social and economic disequity, the environment, climate change, political instability. They had also had enough feeling like their lives had been invaded by constant advertising and the push of the consumer culture. They didn't want the same life for their daughter Janet. Jane had read about a place named Kailash Eco Village. It sounded too good to be true, but they checked it out and they moved in a year later. Kailash was once a boutique specialty 35-unit apartment complex with an Hawaiian theme, a pool, and decorations. Those days were long gone. Enter Ole and Maitre, looking for a place to start an eco-village. The apartments were a good fit. A fourth of the units were unusable. There were drug shootouts in the parking lot. Kailash is now one of the most impressive stories of social and urban renewal one could find. Jane, John, and Janet moved into the thriving eco-village, home to about 50 people. Primary goals at Kailash are to reduce eco-footprints, build a strong eco-village community culture, and contribute to the nearby neighborhood and beyond. Important to know, Kailash is a rental, and it's affordable. And Ole and Maitre own the place. They set the boundaries, and the rules are all sensible. People are expected to participate in community life. There are many committees to be a part of, such as composting, recycling, bikes, gardens, kids, depaving, art, social. The eco-village also reaches out to the nearby neighborhood with particular interest in preparedness and emergency planning. There's a car share program, a tool share, even kid committees. People play music and share common interests. Jane, John, and Janet have adjusted to community life. They've made lots of new friends and expanded their social horizons. Their cost of living is much less. They have only one car now, and they share that with others. They've joined several committees and working groups. There's lots of places for Janet to explore. With so many activities and ways to be involved, there's less need to find social stimulation and entertainment away from the eco-village. adding to the excitement and the dynamic social conditions is Annapurna, a larger, also run-down apartment complex next door. Ole and Maitre bought that complex several years earlier to turn into another eco-village. The two interact almost as one, and that greatly expands in scale the social, economic, and cultural possibilities. While John continues to work remote with his previous job, Jane and two of her Kyle Ash pals are learning all they can from Ole and Maitre about how to buy and convert rundown apartment complexes into eco-villages. Given the troubling trends and thousands of rundown apartment complexes all over the country, creating new eco-villages addresses many issues at the same time. The experience at Kyle Ash has been life-changing for many people. This story is part fiction and part real. Jane, John, and Janet are fictional characters, but Kyle Ash and Annapurna eco-villages do exist as described in this story. They are in southeast Portland, Oregon. Check out kyleashecovillage.org. The eco-village is well documented on their website. Stories like this in existing newsletters, websites, and magazines can inspire millions of people to action for moving towards sustainability and social uplift. Okay, Mark, we're ready for a break. When we come back, we'll touch on faith communities, labor, and inviting capitalism to a truth and reconciliation process.
Wow, I feel a little bit guilty delaying your talking about truth and reconciliation, but I'll make it fast, Jan. Folks, this is Spirit in Action, and our website is northernspiritradio.org, where we have links to all of our guests for both Spirit in Action and Song of the Soul for the past almost 19 years, but in particular for today's guest host, Jan Spencer. NorthernSpiritRadio.org is communication central for us and for you, so use it to track down more info, post feedback and input to us on the site to enhance our mutual knowledge. Check out the 35 or so radio stations across the country where our shows are syndicated, and find the 15-plus podcast aggregators who share our podcasts. Please donate to support Northern Spirit Radio. We really need your help to be sustainable, as our coffers are really low at the moment, and so you can make a real difference. And help out your local community radio station as well. Such great work they do on so little money. Let's head back to Jan Spencer's Primer for Paradigm Shift and learn about capitalism's truth and reconciliation future.
Okay, thanks, Mark. We'll pick up where we left off. Let's take a look at how labor, faith communities, and truth and reconciliation might fit in with paradigm shift. Labor has been a part of many progressive changes in society. Unions have a core purpose to make life better for workers and their communities. Historically, organized labor has campaigned for safer working conditions, the end of child labor, limiting hours and days in the work week, striking for worker rights and justice. Workers acting in their best interest predate the American Revolution. Labor history includes the period of apprenticeships and artisans, while the Industrial Revolution created the conditions for labor to organize in greater numbers and complexity. Railroads and mining were early sectors to organize. Not to suggest a pristine record over the past 200 years, labor's ideals and struggles on behalf of working people have played a powerful role in this nation's history. After all, organized labor came into being for a reason. Labor remains a very important player in public affairs, and now, Recall the edge of history. Labor has a unique new opportunity. Labor could transform itself from a participant in a failed economic and political system to become a pioneer of paradigm shift. Pushing back on capitalism and its patrons and politics on behalf of sustainability and social uplift is an enormous opportunity for labor. The ideals of worker solidarity, civic responsibility, a history of social vision, and experience dealing with big business provides labor with a unique capacity, one might even suggest a responsibility, to take on this immense, timely, and challenging new purpose and identity. The change in focus for labor would not be easy. Instead of its traditional struggle with business for a larger part of the economic pie, labor would be confronted by the same challenges as the rest of society, to downsize its eco-footprint and redefine what is the goal of life, and to gain the wisdom to say we have enough stuff. Moving past capitalism and towards sustainability and uplift will mean a cut in pay for everyone, labor included, simply because high pay plus cheap prices made possible by external costs equals damaging levels of consumption that we clearly see are not sustainable. Labor can ask itself, does our movement primarily exist to gain a larger share of a not sustainable and corrupt economic pie, or do we exist to help our members and communities move towards health and well-being for the entire society? That destination, a sustainable economic pie that is shared fairly. Labor could move towards this new advocacy, either top-down or even better, bottom-up. Both leadership and rank and file will all need to make a leap in consciousness like the rest of society, but labor's ideals and vision give it an added incentive and capacity to embrace paradigm shift. With broad social and political reach already available, labor can encourage and influence millions of others to also downsize their eco-footprints and upsize their civic engagement. Business stands to benefit from paradigm shift, too. Best case scenario would be business and labor working together on behalf of sustainability, uplift, and all of society. As with the rest of society, hopeful managed dissent by both individuals and society will be better than unprepared or even resisted dissent when conditions, even for the well-off, become impossible to ignore. Widespread society pre-adapting to sustainability is in everyone's best interest. Imagine, as labor explains to its members the why and how to downsize, a similar message is going out from hundreds of other public interest organizations to millions of their own members. A widespread similar message for downsizing means there is a broad social movement with a common goal, and that translates into solidarity and common cause. Sustainability will certainly offer new opportunities for labor. A sustainable society will call for new products, services, and skills. At the same time, many products and services that will not make the cut to sustainability require both white and blue-collar skills that can adapt to the needs of sustainability. With a high level of social cohesion, organizations and entities can use their skills and experience to help each other to adjust to the needs of a downsized future. Ideally, there can be help from the political and governmental realm. There are sustainability visionaries in all sectors of society, and their visions can move from good ideas to reality more readily and effectively when we have a greater sense of purposeful common cause, solidarity, and we are aware of each other's success and each other's needs. This may all sound like a wishful dream, but continuing the consumer culture, an ever-expanding GNP, and overconsumption as a way of life will only make the social, political, economic, environmental problems we now have even worse. Honesty and common sense applied to economics and society will look brilliant compared to what we have now. Much of the consumer culture will not make the cut to sustainability, but what we gain from sustainability will easily make up for what we leave behind. Labor can play a very important part in helping to move our society towards sustainability and uplift. Faith organizations have an enormous toolbox. First, almost all faith groups share a set of social ideals and goals that can easily translate to sustainability and social uplift. Recall the wisdom of the world's great spiritual traditions. This wisdom is ready-made for paradigm shift, and it comes from virtually all faith traditions, regardless of place in geography, time in history, culture, or language. This wisdom is simple but comprehensive. Care for the natural world, modesty of lifestyle, uplift of the spirit, service to the community, and personal accountability. A society could be based on that wisdom. Faith organizations should be helping to lead the charge to sustainability and uplift. Most faith groups have built infrastructure, such as a fellowship hall, meeting rooms, that can host progressive educational community events, and many already do. A faith group can invite speakers to address important issues to an existing audience and an invited public. Faith groups have an outreach capacity and are usually part of larger networks and associations. One activist member of the network might catalyze others to do likewise. If the faith group has outdoor physical space, they can host community gardens and orchards. Many faith organizations have study groups. These would be great opportunities for individuals to take initiative to propose paradigm shift ideas within the context of the Quran, Bible, or Torah within that study group. Many faith organizations even have social concerns committees that already discuss issues related to sustainability. Time to turn discussion into movement. Faith groups often have a standing in the community that lends a stature for having access to places of influence in the community that other groups might not. Many faith groups already engage in positive community affairs. One particular church here in Eugene has been the go-to location for progressive events for many years. The facility, with a large social hall and classrooms, is perfect for medium-sized public events. The cost for using those facilities has always been modest, and the church has been welcoming for many events and organizations. This speaker has helped organize dozens of gatherings related to paradigm shift at that location over the years. Many faith groups have declining and aging memberships. A motivated clergy or member of the congregation could perhaps catalyze a big shift in the agenda of the church, mosque, or temple by taking a more activist orientation. Many seniors would love to volunteer for a positive cause. A re-energized agenda just might lead to new members and public engagement. The more or less pyramid structure of faith groups gives its leaders the position to help elevate and motivate the membership to take on progressive initiatives. The current Pope is well known for his comparatively progressive statements and positions in regard to the environment, climate change, lifestyle, and global affairs. That more progressive content has an effect on millions of church members and the wider world. A local minister, rabbi, or imam could do the same at a smaller scale. The take-home message. Almost any faith organization has existing assets and ideals that can be used for more ambitious discussion, action, and leadership on behalf of sustainability and social uplift. Just as important, sharing a common cause for a healthy and uplifted society could bring faith groups together like never before. Moving along, another way to advance the cause of paradigm shift is truth and reconciliation. This truth and reconciliation would be enormously controversial, and that's good. The process would be hard-hitting but measured. Historically, the purpose of a truth and reconciliation process, and we'll abbreviate that by saying TRP, is to acknowledge the long-term systematic wrongdoing a powerful entity has imposed on a much less powerful entity, and to reach some kind of explanation and accountability for that wrongdoing. Truth and reconciliation has taken place all over the world. Perhaps the best known was in South Africa, established after the end of apartheid, to address the many years of official repression and discrimination committed by the white minority government on the black majority. Other countries have called on truth and reconciliation to account for historical wrongdoing. Canada, Australia, Norway, and Sweden have all made use of the TRP in regard to past government policy that purposefully discriminated and oppressed the lifestyles and culture of indigenous people. A TRP in Chile addressed the disappearances and human rights abuses committed by the regime of military dictator Augusto Pinochet. America's truth and reconciliation candidate is capitalism. Capitalism's work is to create as much want and desire for its vast array of products as possible. Starting at a young age with clever and incessant commercial messaging, it shapes the values and lifestyles of hundreds of millions of people so they can conform to their roles as consumers. Important terms that describe the methods of capitalism are social engineering, credit, external costs, and consumer culture. The outcome of this social engineering and consumer culture is a society based on staggering levels of overconsumption of resources and energy, a remarkable concentration of economic and political power, climate change, and lost human potential. A truth and reconciliation process for capitalism would address how and why this consumer culture came into being. It would identify the damage to people and planet, and then who and what is responsible for that damage. At the same time, another task for the TRP would be to generate sets of recommendations for individuals, communities, and nation to move towards sustainability and uplift. An important difference between capitalism's TRP and those mentioned above is that capitalism is not a government, it's an economic system. capitalism is not a singular entity, yet its principles and methods result in a consistent set of behaviors by the world of business, particularly in the U.S., and that is to promote as much consumption of resources and energy as possible, and not to be distracted by ethics, damage to public health, and honesty. Excess is the calling card of American-style capitalism. Extremely important to add, capitalism receives the full blessing and encouragement of government, both administrative and elected, from national to local. Government is an essential partner to capitalism and fully shares responsibility for the degraded conditions of this society and the environment. Another primary difference with capitalism's wrongdoing compared to the governments mentioned above is those governments targeted specific people and groups, such as indigenous populations and political opponents. Capitalism's target is the entire population. Young, old, well-off, not well-off, in shape, out of shape, male, female, white, black, red, everyone. Still another difference with capitalism's truth and reconciliation is that its process would not be limited to wrongdoing to people. It would also take great interest in damage to the natural world. A TRP would examine the cause and effect of social engineering, overconsumption, external costs, and their damage to the natural world. Another important task for capitalism's TRP is to assess the harm it's caused to positive human potential. For example, what could have been accomplished if literally billions of hours of person time lost to passive and even violent entertainment were applied instead to personal uplift, community service, and planet repair? Extreme social and economic disequity, well known to this society, means reduced opportunity for millions of people to manifest their positive potential. Individuals miss out, and so does society, on the positive possibilities of millions of people. Capitalism is also very inefficient. Consider, millions of jobs exist to repair the damage caused by millions of other jobs. For example, public health professionals deal with the widespread and largely avoidable damage caused by junk food, tobacco, cars, and depression. What might a truth and reconciliation for capitalism actually look like? A TNR for capitalism might combine the elements of a graduate school seminar, a court of law, a think tank, and traveling roadshow. The cost for a TNR process could range into the tens of millions of dollars. Who would organize it and raise that kind of money? There are many well-endowed foundations and individuals with an interest in these issues. There are civic-minded organizations that could take the lead and or participate, including faith groups, labor, business, academic, researchers of all kinds, and more. A commission thoughtfully brought together would map out a plan for the TNR process with wide-ranging input on a wide range of issues. The process could take many months, would certainly have twists and turns, but there would be an awareness of the importance of the process and the need to be deliberate, but timely and accountable. The commission could visit places that help tell the story of this nation's contrasting conditions at this point in history. perhaps a clear-cut industrial brownfield, wealthy neighborhood, a crisis center, factories, a country club, migrant workers, urban blight, a penthouse, confined livestock feeding operation, schools, worker-owned business, suburban permaculture, eco-villages, homeless camp, Times Square, a reservation, a neighborhood bisected by an urban freeway, and more. What places would you suggest the commission to visit? The commissioners, people interviewed, and submissions invited from the public could respond to a wide range of questions and statements relating to life as we know it. Content could range from strictly science and fact to personal anecdotes, philosophy, and theory. The commission would produce a document of all writings and correspondence, and it would be made available to the public. Here are several basic questions for the truth and reconciliation process. What is the mission statement for capitalism and the consumer culture? Explain the term external cost. Can capitalism and the consumer culture exist without externalizing the cost of production, consumption, and disposal? Does advertising as we know it qualify as propaganda and social engineering? Does capitalism bring out the best in positive human potential? Are capitalism and democracy compatible? Is it okay if profits are more important than affordable housing and healthy food? Those are a lot of pretty heavy questions. But then, our present condition as a nation and a society is in need of a lot of heavy lifting. And the questions and issues mentioned here are only the beginning. Let's review taking paradigm shift ideas out to the wider world. First, we have many allies and assets to work with. Virtually every public interest organization exists to address some kind of damage caused by capitalism and the consumer culture. We have an immense horizontal movement in waiting. If hundreds of public interest organizations explain to their members why they share a common cause with hundreds of other organizations, the collective identity could be very powerful. If these organizations also shared with their millions of members the stories that already show what paradigm shift can look like and boosted those stories by explaining truth and reconciliation for capitalism, this new movement could activate and come to life. You can read a transcript of this broadcast of Spirit in Action on my website, suburbanpermaculture.org. And I welcome your comments on this broadcast. Please contact me via my website, suburbanpermaculture.org. This is Jan Spencer in Eugene, Oregon. Be strong, be safe, be well, but don't be shy. Okay, Mark, I am returning the microphone to you. Thanks.
And thank you, Jan, for all the pioneering and visioning work you've done and continue to do. The links are on northernspiritradio.org, folks, so you can wrap your mind and your hands around this much-needed work. We'll have Jan back with us in 3 months, so you have some time to put into practice what he's talking about. We'll have more good world-healing workers with us when you join us next week for Spirit in Action. The theme music for this program is Turning of the World, performed by Sarah Thompson. Check out all things Spirit in Action on northernspiritradio.org. Guests, links, stations, and a place for your feedback, suggestions, and support. Thanks for listening. I'm Mark Helpsmeet, and I hope you find deep roots to support you to grow steadily toward the light. This is Spirit in Action.